Hey everyone, this podcast is part of Story Mode, the podcast network of Gamefully Unemployed. You can support us and gain access to other great exclusive podcasts at patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. That's patreon.com/GAMEFULLY unemployed, which is spelled like it sounds. Yeah!
We're live!
Yeah. At the time! Yeah. Not when you guys are listening to this. We are not doing this right now.
Yeah.
We did this already.
Did what already? What did we do already?
We just watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Was that our intro?
Last night we watched a Rick Dalton double feature. All the shooting. I love that stuff, you know, the killing.
A lot of killing.
Yeah, I grabbed the wheel on that one.
That's fine.
I felt the Holy Spirit coursing through me.
We saw this movie, this Tarantino
we
movie.
Did.
This three-hour-long Tarantino movie. Tom?
Yeah, it's a shade under 3 hours. It's like 240.
What did you think?
I liked it.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I thought it was fun.
It's the same issue I have with all Tarantino films. I thought it was a good movie that was frustrating because it's self-indulgent.
Oh yeah, it is.
And so it was kind of disappointing, only in the sense that it felt like his directing wise, like the cinematography and the way just the scenes played out, it felt very good restraint. There was like restraint in the way he was shooting it. Mm-hmm. But it's 2 hours and 40 minutes, and I'm pretty sure like 30 of those minutes are just people driving to music.
Yeah, that's fair. I never felt bored, though, personally.
I got bored in the middle.
I was enjoying this movie so much and enjoying these characters that...
Right. Great characters.
Yeah, I just thought it was fun, surprisingly fun. And pretty funny. Like, this might be one of his funnier movies.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because the state... Again, weirdly, the stakes are pretty low.
Yeah, well, that's the thing
until
about
the very
this.
End.
For a while, I thought this could be the first Tarantino film that I could recommend to like my parents. Until it wasn't, and that was fine.
Right.
There was a lot of scenes where I almost said out loud, "Why are we watching this?" Mm-hmm. Because I don't know. I don't even know if Tarantino knows why a lot of scenes exist in the movie. The scene where they just. Like, there's scenes where people are just watching TV, and we have to, like, sit and watch them watch mm-hmm. it. And it's yeah. like, I don't need to see this. I don't need to see, like, I don't need to see someone get in a car, and then I don't need to see them then drive to the location. And when, in fact, that is the sign of a bad movie, I think. Like, movies like Birdemic and The Room do that, where they're like, mm-hmm. we're going to show you how someone gets somewhere. It's like, no, I know how they get somewhere.
Yeah. Conventionally, that's true, but
he's allowed to do it, and I don't think he should be.
Well, I think when you have a way to make clearly, it didn't engage you, but I just said I never felt bored.
Well,
so
the
even
music
in those stretches,
was nice.
I'm just like I'm enjoying watching the landscape. I'm enjoying being in this world with
right.
these characters, and like listening to the music, and just like you know, I was into it. So normally that is correct. Like you
I
don't
mean,
that is a true thing.
Yeah,
but
I think
he gets away with it because he's doing it better than a Birdemic does it.
Yes, and I know what you're saying is that like for example, I love 2001, and that's a film that could be cut down if we're talking about it the way I'm talking about it.
Yes,
the difference to me is that 2001 amounts to something, whereas this does too. But I guess I like a lot like.
Well.
I don't know if it is the same, to be honest. It might just be more that I enjoyed watching the space stuff and like that specific type of art as opposed to watching Brad Pitt drive around. It just felt like there was a lot of scenes that didn't need to be in. Like when they're just doing a whole movie scene together,
mm-hmm.
After a while I just got bored because I was like, this isn't the movie I'm watching. This is a movie within a movie. You don't have to show me a 5-minute sequence from the movie.
I disagree because that's Rick Dalton's arc. Like that's his character. Is he doesn't think he has it anymore. He fucks up the first part of that scene and is so distraught and distressed over it. And then when he comes back, he crushes it.
He crushes it. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I didn't need to. Like, I feel like Leonardo DiCaprio, like in Django, like has a scene where he crushes it. That's shorter from, like, a shorter version of the scene we had to watch. Like, I feel like they could have done that, but they could have done it, you know, with half as long. Like, yeah. I feel like a lot of this is just the fact that Tarantino, no one's saying no to him in post. And so he can make a 2-hour and 40-minute movie where he doesn't have to cut anything down for time.
Oh, he cut a lot out of this film, actually.
Yeah, that's true. There were people who were cut from it.
Their entire yeah, people, like, but recognizable actors.
It just sort of dragged for me.
That's fair.
Yeah. Hmm. Because I mean, I had this with Hateful Eight, where it's like, this story doesn't need to be 3 hours long. This story is a fairly efficient story that you're dragging out with these long sequences where, like, he's not making an epic, I guess, is my problem. But we're getting epic length for a story that should actually be, like, this. I think I would have loved this. I would have loved this film if it was like an 1-hour and 40-minute comedy. Like that was just a little, it was just more efficient. It could be the same performances. It's just too long.
I mean, that's, yeah. It's, again, that's entirely subjective because I didn't feel the same way.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, it's, you don't guess. It's the literal truth. I did
well,
not feel the same
would
way.
Would you so say you like Tarantino
the film
films? Would you like, do you like early Tarantino films?
Yeah.
Actually, no, that's a wrong. I'm wrong. Because Pulp Fiction's long, isn't it? Pulp Fiction's like 2.5
hours. Yeah,
Pulp
Fiction's 2.5 hours.
Because I was going to say it feels like his movies are getting longer, but I don't think that's true.
And the people may strike me dead for saying this, but I think Reservoir Dogs is boring.
I'm not a huge fan of Reservoir Dogs.
I think that's a boring film, and it's his shortest one.
I mean, it comes down to, I'm not a big fan of most of Tarantino, because I have this with the guy who does The Favorite. I have this with a lot of directors. It's hard, like, it when a director is getting in the way of the movie by making it so theirs...
Yeah.
I get annoyed, which is why I liked a lot of this, because it didn't feel like it was Tarantino. Like, he wasn't doing that as much.
Mm-hmm.
The lines felt a little better. Like, the dialogue felt a little less Tarantino.
It's one of the reasons...
It felt more mature.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why the length didn't bother me, because I liked everything that was happening. Like, it was... Yeah, we see a whole scene between him and Timothy Oliphant, but, like, I didn't care because I liked the dialogue. I was anxious for Rick Dalton's character because I knew that he was going to fuck something up, that's what he was worried about.
Yeah. Well, no, nothing...
I just liked watching Leo and Timothy Oliphant do a cowboy scene together.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And getting Timothy Oliphant to play a cowboy.
Yeah. I was like, fucking put DiCaprio in Deadwood.
Yeah.
You cowards.
Fuck it. I guess I don't mind any of the stuff with him because he's the main character. Same with Brad Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's stuff where, like, for, like, the whole part where he goes overseas to do spaghetti westerns, and we have to see this, like, montage of, like, here's the film he did, and now here's the film he did, and now here, and I'm like, yeah, I know Tarantino. I know you like spaghetti westerns. You can do this quicker. Like, it's that stuff where...
That sequence was, like, 4 minutes, maybe.
Yeah, I know. It all adds up, though.
It was a pretty quick montage.
It's a lot of small things like that, though. Like, when they sit and watch TV, and they show the full, like, they show, like, a minute of this episode that they're watching... Like, they are nice moments.
That's one of my favorite scenes.
Really?
Just because it was a nice moment between those two characters.
That's
and
true.
Like, oh,
it was good
Brad
for their
Pitt
friendship.
Is so supportive of him. Yeah. Like,
I just think there's a more efficient way to do this movie without
There's a more efficient way to do this movie, but one could argue whether or not the movie would be better. Yeah, I don't know. It wouldn't be the same movie.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, it wouldn't be. I don't know if it would have. I don't know if it would. If I would have felt the same way about it, for instance.
Right.
Like, if efficiency isn't everything.
No, it's not everything. But for, I don't know, for a premise like this, like, it felt like I was in the first act of a movie for most of the movie, because not much happens.
Yeah, that's true. The first 2 hours of the film are like a single 24-hour period.
Yeah, and nothing happens. And it was like, well things happen, but you know what I mean? Where I was watching and I was like, are we going to get the plot soon? Like, are we going to get, like, what this movie's about anytime soon? Because it seems to be I'm just following these people around. And, like, yeah, they are funny and interesting. But I just started getting bored because I was like, I don't know what this movie's about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that sort of thing where, yeah, there's a lot of good scenes in it. But and I don't know if I can pinpoint exact scenes to cut out. But I was just like, make this an hour and a half. Make the, you know, I don't think you had enough story. And I feel like I'm watching a series of vignettes that are entertaining a lot of the times. But it's like, it's that sort of thing where it's frustrating to watch and be like, how did someone needs to tell him, like, no, this doesn't make sense. Like the Bruce Lee stuff, all that stuff was fun. Everything in it was fun. It's just, I got tired of it after a while because I was like struggling to figure out what the movie was about.
Yeah, that's true. Other than you're just following Rick Dalton, who is at a point in his career where he has no idea how it's going to go.
Right.
And you either care about that or you don't.
I did care about it.
The Bruce Lee scene, I mean, I can tell you what the purpose of that scene was. He embellished it.
What's that?
Right. It's showing that Brad Pitt can beat the shit out of people, yes, which we need to know for the end of the film.
Well, okay, but we do when we don't, because I also think that we would have believed he could beat the shit out of people as a stuntman with everything else.
Yeah, we would have believed it, but I mean, it's just planting a seed, and it's embellished because that was an opportunity to embellish it and have a funny cameo.
Yeah.
of Bruce Lee.
Oh yeah, but I think it's that last part that's the problem, is that there's no restraint where like you're taught in like film school or just in writing in general, where it's like, you know, when we write articles and it's 5,000 words, it's like you have to cut it down, and it's like, but there's a lot of funny stuff in here, and it's like, doesn't matter, you have to kill the things you love to make mm-hmm. it work. Mm-hmm. And I know this is the unpopular opinion here. People like this movie. It's getting good reviews. But, like, it felt like there was a lot of stuff in here that he was just refusing to get rid of because he liked it. But it made the movie way too long, and it didn't go anywhere for a while. And so, like, just basic... I know art is subjective, and this is a piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, that lost me in the middle, because I wanted, because most of his movies, even if they're long, they still have like a story.
Mm-hmm.
And this didn't seem to have a story for a long time.
Right. It's more like a character study.
Yeah. And I guess there's nothing wrong with that. It's just it wasn't. And again, I really enjoyed a lot of this, but it frustrated me because it was like, man, if this was like half hour shorter, I bet I would have liked it a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot to like.
Yeah, no, I like I said, I enjoyed this movie.
Yeah.
I was fully on board. Enjoyed all the stuff. I didn't know which way the movie was gonna go with the murders at
really?
The end.
I just figured that was the joke, is like, oh, Tarantino's gonna rewrite the Manson murders, and he did.
He did, yeah. But like I wasn't sure whether it was going to be an Inglourious Basterds version of it, or if he was going to use the murders and this sort of old-timey Hollywood guy at the precipice of his career, you know, to make that metaphor. And that's also kind of when the golden age of Hollywood came to an end, right around that time.
And so
using the murders as a metaphor for that.
Yeah, I would have appreciated a different ending, now that I'm thinking about it, because it is... Like, it's like a stream of consciousness. Like, I feel like he writes his movies by just speaking out loud, like, into a mm-hmm. microphone, and then he never changes it. Like, because it does end with him just like, nah, okay, and then they beat each other up, and it's fucking cool. And, like, it is cool. It was a great scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it sums up my frustration with Tarantino, is every single Tarantino scene I like in most of his movies. It's just when you put them all together, I don't necessarily think they're a good story. And I'm wondering what you think. Do you think it was ghoulish to do this?
I don't know. That's one of the questions I have.
I think it might have been.
It definitely toes the line, that's for sure.
I think there's I think these people, their families are still alive.
I believe some of them might be, yeah.
Yeah. And I think this, imagining a world where Sharon Tate and her unborn kid aren't killed. And I guess it's again going back to I'm not sure what he was trying to say by doing that.
I don't know. I think, I guess the same thing he was trying to say with Inglourious Basterds. I don't know. It's just...
Well, I don't know if he's trying to say anything.
It might not be a other than what if and wouldn't this have been nice
yeah,
if this
and
happened?
I think that going back to Frustration Tarantino is most of his films kind of seem to come down to wouldn't this be cool? Like as the thing he's saying is just like, I think this is cool. Isn't this cool? I like this music. I like, what if they killed Hitler and it was really violent? But I don't think he's ever really trying to say anything with his movies.
Not really.
But he gets so much praise for saying so little. Like his movies are tend to be not very deep, at least.
No.
And like they are fun, but
they're not praised for being deep either.
No, I guess not. It's just like, I guess he did something in this that's, I think, pretty insensitive thing to do. And it doesn't mean anything that I can tell. Or maybe I'm missing.
I don't think that it does. Other than it just being, this is a fable, a fairy tale about Hollywood.
Right.
And wouldn't it have been nice if these two knock around dudes had managed to kind of accidentally intervene?
Right.
And
you could
and
argue
Brad Pitt just demolishes these murderers.
Yeah, you could argue that he's saying that the Manson murders marked an end.
They did, yeah.
And wouldn't it be nice if it kept going? Like, maybe that's what he's saying, is that this is where everything went wrong for him in Hollywood and stuff like that. Like, if he's feeling very cynical about modern movies, this is where it all started to veer off.
For sure, and that relates to what I thought the movie might have been about more literally, you know,
right,
about the death of the golden age of Hollywood. And yeah, that could be him saying, because it very much was marked by the Tate LaBianca murders, because it sparked this hysteria, because they had this list of people they were going to murder, including Steve McQueen and I think Frank Sinatra. So it was like this panic that spread throughout Hollywood that kind of, and it was also sort of the end of like the hippie movement, like the free love movement. So it was like, it was an end of a lot of things. And yeah, maybe DiCaprio's Rick Dalton's supposed to represent all of those things. Well, not all of those things, but like the golden age of Hollywood, and wouldn't it have been nice if he got to keep going on and wouldn't. So, yeah, that could
be. Yeah, because at the end, it kind of is like there's hope for his career.
Right. He gets to go in and meet Sharon Tate, and they, you know, mentioned earlier, it's like, man, if I could just, I'm one
pool party
away.
Yeah.
And it is kind of a pool party because he sets, he sets Sadie Maglutz on fire in the pool.
Yes. I think I like it more with that message. Because
I think that's it.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm not sure if it's worth doing that. For people who haven't seen it, it's like killing Hitler, but it's the Manson murders. It's basically he causes them to go to their house instead of Sharon Tate's. And
yeah,
I thought
they
like
live right next door.
Yeah, and I love that because there was two ways it could go, because I love the idea of like where this is a person who lives next door to Sharon Tate during the Manson murders. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And like someone sort of, and feels like he's a has-been, he's at a crossroads in his career. So like this really significant thing. Maybe it isn't going to be any more than this murder happens next door. But then the moment like Brad Pitt's interacting with them and stuff, it was like, okay, I think it's just, yeah, they're going to stop it. And they do in a very violent, crazy way.
I still wasn't sure. Like I definitely
knew
I knew Brad Pitt was going to be involved somehow.
You know what I almost wanted? And I feel like people wouldn't have been satisfied, but when he comes out to yell at them, I thought that was going to be the end of it. I thought it was just like all it took was one person
he was gonna
being
drive
like,
away. Yeah.
"Get out of here, you hippies!" And they're like, "Ah."
That would have been funny. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I just assumed just because that was the joke, where it was like, "Oh, good, Tarantino's going to rewrite the Manson murders," and
he did.
Yeah.
Only the Tate ones, though. That's the other thing I wanted. Well, there's two other things I wanted to talk to you about. The murder of Sharon Tate, the Manson family murders.
Oh, there are other murders, yeah.
They're officially called the Tate LaBianca murders.
Okay.
Because the LaBiancas, a husband and wife, were murdered before, I think.
Right. You know
who
lives in that
now.
House now, by the way?
No.
The creator of Full House.
Oh, yeah. Of course, that fucking goblin bought that house.
I think they tore it down. I think he refurbished it. But in the property where the Tate murders, I think he might have moved now. I don't know. But it was I was reading a fun article about how he lived there.
That is fun.
It's just a haunted place. Just never gets more.
Yeah,
more
why would
haunted.
You ever?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's part of, like, you can do murder tours, right, around here?
Oh, yeah, you can do the Hollywood death tours. Oh, okay, the LaBianca killings were after the Tate killings. All right, so that answers that question.
Yeah. I knew for a while I knew a lot about the Chuck Manson stuff.
Well, I read Helter Skelter a few years ago.
I'm glad they had Bruce Dern in there to play, because I remember reading about that, but the ranch itself. Mm-hmm. And I think...
Yeah.
I think this is why this does have some meaning to it, because the ranch also symbolizes like the golden age that's gone.
Yeah.
Of this old Western place that they were took over.
And like, Westerns are a genre that don't get made anymore.
Yeah.
They're emblematic, and he's a Western star, so they're emblematic of that period of Hollywood.
Right.
The golden age of Hollywood, yeah, for sure.
I'm still torn on the ending though. And the violence,
I think it was so funny.
Like, yeah, I'm trying to get meaning from it, and I think the meaning is
I disagree.
I think I would argue that there's a little bit of meaning had he made it better, which was we show at the beginning him killing the Nazis with the flamethrower. So it's the idea of it's again the old Hollywood stuff. It's them turning into like. Start like this the people they play at the end to fight evil.
Yeah.
I think I think Tarantino isn't restrained enough to have done that. Like I feel like there could have been a better way to do that than that ridiculous sequence, which was fun. But I think it got muddled by like the ultra violence.
I think it's relief for the audience because the part of what you know adds to the film's length is that sequence they keep cutting to in between Rick and Cliff of Sharon Tate at the movies, and the purpose of that is
to make us like her and want her to live,
to make us like her and to make us very sad because it was this, you know, this was like the very beginning of her career,
right?
And she seems like a nice person and she's just there enjoying her movie, so it's like, oh fuck, like you're just feeling bummed out that whole time, and it's like sort of it's tightening an emotional noose, I suppose. So when it changes so abruptly and he's just annihilating these murderers, it's like relief for the audience.
Right.
Like, oh, what happened isn't what's going to happen. The cartoonish over the topness of it could be a couple of things. One, it could just be Tarantino's cartoonish violence.
I'm not against the cartoonish over the topness. I think he didn't do it. Like I feel like the purpose of the flamethrower was to reflect the violent films that he does.
Yes.
Right? The problem is that the violence besides the flamethrower was very modern violence. Like,
yeah.
And that's what it is. That's why I feel like there is something to that. But since it's a Tarantino type of violence, I would have liked to see cheesier violence, like old timey, more like punching and stuff.
I think that's the difference between what Cliff's doing and what Rick is doing, because when we see Sadie get the idea, she's like, we've grown up watching these guys fake murder on TV, so Rick is doing the fake murder, you know what I mean? Like the over-the-top fake murdering, and Cliff's doing the actual murdering.
Right, that's true.
It could be, there's also a degree of the same thing that happens in Inglourious Basterds where it's like, fuck these people.
Right. This and Inglourious Basterds, which I need to go back and revisit Inglourious because I remember really liking it. Again, it's a lot of scenes I really liked that when put together kind of made me feel tired, but, this rewriting history to make it so these good guys win.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that? What kind of mindset do you think that comes from? I don't know. Is it constructive? Because it also feels like it's the idea of like, but what if it all works out? And it's like, yeah, but it doesn't.
But
and
it
like,
yeah,
and like, it's important to talk about the fact that it didn't. More to be like, well, what if Hitler was murdered? And it's like, yeah, but he wasn't. So what are you? What are you even fucking saying? Like,
yeah, I don't know.
It feels. Yeah, it feels superficial without enough of I'm conflicted on it because I don't know if it's like is this a good idea or not. It doesn't feel like it.
I don't know if it is or not. I do know that Tarantino himself very often gets so caught up in what he cares about and what's important to him that he's not able to see what is culturally important or what's like important to the world in general.
Yeah, I just don't think he knows how to tell a coherent story a lot of the time. Like narratively, I don't think he's too self-indulgent to tell a good story. If that makes sense, like me saying I haven't watched Inglourious Basterds in a while, or like this movie, like I knew coming into this movie before I saw it was like, oh yeah, I can't wait to watch this and then not watch it for 5 years or more and forget mm-hmm. it to watch it, because his movies often are like I never want to revisit them.
Yeah, I've watched a few of his movies a lot.
Yeah,
like. Pretty regularly. Like I don't think he has a problem telling a coherent story. Like I'm never lost.
No, it's more, yeah, it's not coherent. That's the wrong word.
It's like I think I see what you're
it's self-indulgent.
What you're
getting at. It's just it's so self-indulgent a lot of the time.
Meandering.
Yes, meandering.
I think he likes existing in the worlds that he creates. And if you're not enjoying it, like I think when you compared it to 2001, because I assume one of the things you like about watching 2001 is being in that world, right?
Yes. Maybe. I would say a little bit.
If you're not into it, then it's like,
right.
It's like, well, I don't care about living in this world.
Yeah, I guess with Tarantino, it doesn't feel as much like world building as it feels like he gets ADD about things. Like I always thought of the beginning of Pulp Fiction to perfectly mm-hmm. symbolize his career, which is in the beginning credits, it's the credits and it's a song and you're like, oh, this is great, like this is pumping me up, and then halfway through the credits, not even, they literally have the sound of a radio turning and they put on another song and mm-hmm. then they put on another song and then they mm-hmm. put on another song, and I was like, you had a good start, why are you switching channels?
Because that's the movie.
Exactly. I guess, but like it also is his career. Oh no, yeah, that's definitely, yeah.
It's literally the movie Pulp Fiction, but yeah.
Yeah, it is. But that always perfectly symbolized his career to me, which was like his films always seem like a mush of styles that he thinks is neat and like scenes mm-hmm. that he thinks is neat, and he doesn't want to mm-hmm. get rid of it all, and it ends up being like top heavy or bottom heavy or like this kind of mutant and so, again, I like a lot of the scenes themselves,
mm-hmm.
and he's off doing his own thing. God help us if he actually gets a Star Trek.
I mean, it can't be any worse than what's currently being made.
Right. But he's not hurting anybody by doing this, and it's good that these films exist, and it's good that we have films that are art out there still that people are seeing. But personally, when I watch his movies, they just feel so meandering that I feel like I'm watching a film student's first movie, but just a really, really good one, where it's mm-hmm. like you haven't learned restraint. You haven't learned how to tell a good narrative mm-hmm. because you're too busy telling me what songs you're into at the time. And I think that's why it bugs me.
Mm-hmm. It's weird to me, as obsessed as he is with old-timey Hollywood and music of that era, it's weird to me that this is the first movie he's done set in that time period.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. He's always
strange.
Doing homages to all this stuff. I think it was about, like, time.
Yeah, dude, just make a movie in that time period.
Mm-hmm. Get out. What if after this he just gets out of his system and he's like, oh, I guess I should...
I don't know, man. He's been clinging to Westerns for a long-ass mm-hmm. time.
Well,
starting with Inglourious Basterds. Like, if you watch Inglourious Basterds as a Western, it makes a lot of sense.
Well, that's a lot of his films, is I think they bleed together style because he's just mm-hmm. into a thing at the time. And like you see Reservoir Dogs, and it's like, oh, cool guys in suits doing crime. And then Pulp Fiction, it's like cool guys in suits doing crime.
Cool guys in suits doing crime.
And like, yeah, and he does a lot of that, where it's like Death Proof. Oh, it's ladies kicking ass with the stunt woman. And Kill Bill. Oh, mm-hmm. it's ladies kicking ass. And it's that where, like, he reminds me, I always imagine meeting him as he's the kind of guy who has read some sort of article and is obsessing over it. And, like, everything mm-hmm. is that for a couple weeks. And then he reads something else. He obsesses over it. Mm-hmm. Like, he seems obsessive in the way. And, like, I feel like his obsessions bleed between his films.
They definitely do.
Yeah.
So Inglourious Basterds kind of started his Western kick, and then he goes into Django, and then he goes into The Hateful Eight. So it's just like, I'm still doing Westerns, and now this movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, is still about Westerns.
Yeah.
And I think, so yeah.
Yeah. What saves him, I think, for me, and for, I think this saves him for a lot of people, which is that, god damn, he can make some really great scenes with actors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's great at writing them, and he gets the good actors to give really fun performances.
When Leo's talking to that little girl, none of that
That's
really
a
matters.
Great
but
great scene.
Well, no, that matters actually because it's about
super matters.
Yeah,
actually,
it's the book he's reading and fucking brings him to tears.
And it's a young, it's like literally the youngest actor he could possibly be interacting with too.
Right.
So it's like the next
getting
generation.
Validation from her.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's a great scene.
Yeah, it's all great scenes.
Yeah.
Everything is great scenes, it's and so just, I understand that idea that it's very pretty, and it's very well directed, and there's these, and the music's great, and the acting's great.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't that bored, but I just got bored during the middle. I got to a point where I was like, I don't know. I just want
That's
this
fair.
To conclude.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That is fair for you to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to talk about is sort of, I guess, strangely, after making a movie like Django and after he gets, you know, he gets very deserved criticism for the way he handles race.
Mm-hmm.
There was a huge racial component to the Manson family murders.
Yes, there
and
was.
He doesn't,
wasn't
he
there?
Doesn't say a single word about that in this film.
No.
And it could just be because this is a surprisingly light film. Maybe he just didn't want to have a serious conversation about it, but he never really wants to have a serious conversation about it.
No, he doesn't.
Except Django's the closest he gets.
Yes, but it's very much just white guy fantasy for a lot.
Yeah,
I know he was literally just criticized for this on Twitter, but it is kind of true. I think people lumped him in with Scorsese, which I don't think is fair. But like this movie too, it's like this fantasy version of Hollywood that I feel like if you talk to anybody who lived this era, they would look at this movie and be like, this is just bullshit. Like, and I think it is fantasy and the Westerns as well. Like, he doesn't do realism. He does like a white guy fantasy of these things where, they are kind of naive, I think.
It's on its face naive, though, I think.
Yeah. That's just always been him. Like, crime... Anybody who's like, look how cool crime is, is not someone you need to look to for a serious story about crime. Mm. You know?
No.
Like...
No.
It's that, and there's...
And that's why, even like with Django, where he's talking about a very serious thing, it's still like this over-the-top action superhero movie.
Right.
It's like, okay.
And I think that's when it gets ghoulish, is when, like, in Django, the guy gets eaten by dogs. And it's like, this is fucking horrible.
That's horrific, yeah.
And it's like, I get that you're trying, it's supposed to be horrible, but this movie is something else entirely. And that's sort of it with, like, it feels wrong to do that and then have cartoonish violence later. And he always does that. Django, I remember being so bothered by Django by the ending. Because it reminded me of Old Boy near the end, when the villain is winning. I was like, this is dark. I didn't know what he was going to say with that, but I was like, this is interesting. This is something, and I guess he sort of did it with this, and then it goes, and then you're like I was into it, and then it was like, oh, okay, it's Looney Tunes violence. All right. And then it just, all that interest I had just evaporated because he can't help himself. And he's like, and then they all shoot each other, and it's like, oh, come on, man.
Yeah.
Like, this movie was one where I was like, is he actually making a movie without violence in it? Because that would be interesting, you know? If that movie amounted to something that was emotionally a climax.
I think it might be the first Tarantino movie where he doesn't say a certain racial slur.
Yeah. Yeah, which I'm not gonna praise him for finally not doing that.
No, because there's also, aside from the guy who plays Bruce Lee, there's not a single person of color in this
film. Yes. Yes, that was glaring. And there could have been. That's the thing.
Sure.
But there just wasn't.
No, he, super wasn't.
He also wasn't in it, which I appreciate.
No, yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. He's finally learned that.
Yeah, that's, yeah. You but don't need to be in all your movies, man.
Yeah, and I guess this is, it all comes down to, like, he feels like he's still me when I was in my 20s. Like, he feels like he's never left that era where it's like Tarantino, when I was young, was, like, so cool. Mm-hmm. And then as you get older, you're like, well, he's still good, but it's like, there's got a lot of problems. And I don't know what he's trying to say. And they're, yeah, his movies are pretty naive and, like, fantasies.
Yeah, they are. But I think they're also, I mean, I think he's not pretending they're not fantasies.
No, I guess not.
Like, the movie's literally called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah. I get frustrated because I think it's as he gets older, like, I feel like he gets more talented. And again, there's these really great winners in this.
Yeah.
There's amazing performances. And it's like, I wish you could use all this, your whole arsenal, to tell a story that I will remember, that'll stay with me. Because I like, that means something, that has, like, a surprising ending that isn't just a Tarantino violence ending.
Sure.
Because his movies are getting predictable, too, for that reason.
To a degree, yeah, for sure. But in terms of making a story that sticks with you, again, I think we're entering into the subjective area because, I mean,
yeah, but you know what I mean.
Sticks with me and
all of his movies. Like, yeah, but it feels like he's making the same movie a lot now. I guess it's just that.
I don't know.
It's like reading a really good writer that, like, only writes about having sex with clowns. And you're like, mm-hmm. You're such a good writer. Can you write something that isn't about having sex with clowns? Like, could you write something that's just a little, like, it's that where, like, it was that ending, which I enjoyed, but it was just like, oh, okay, yeah, and then it's violence. I want to see him do something that isn't a Tarantino film. Does that make sense?
You want him to make a movie that you like.
Yeah, well, I want him to stop making the same goddamn type of movie every time. Yeah. I want him to try to do something deeper with his talents. I think that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Something a little more meaningful, because I find his directing, when it's not just him directly homaging other directors, like, he can do great scenes and he does good work. Yeah,
yeah.
But I don't know. The story felt, yeah.
I see. I really liked it.
I liked a lot of it. Yeah,
I enjoyed how simple it was. I enjoyed that it was really just a story about the relationship between these two dudes.
Right. But then, why 3 hours long?
I don't know. You know, it was just the length didn't bother me. So I don't know. I was just having too much fun on a scene to scene basis that it totally didn't bother me at all.
There's some great scenes.
Yeah. There's some really fun scenes.
Yeah. I like when he goes to the ranch and he's just not having any of their bullshit.
That's a great sequence. Yeah. Yeah, that's an amazing sequence.
But that, I mean, that's also when the movie finally starts, things start happening. Like, I think that's the first thing that happens.
Kind of, sort of.
Like, the first hour and a half of this, I feel like for most movies, that would be the first half hour, is they spend so much time establishing these characters.
Yeah. But I mean, it's not invalid to me. Like, it's like, if the characters were terrible, then yes, I would be.
No,
like,
it's not invalid.
Why would we spend this much time on
none
them?
Of it's invalid? That's why I'm going back to the word frustrating, because, like, it's great if people enjoy these movies. I wish there was more to what he's doing. Because I'm frustrated because he is talented and he has so many good actors and I feel like he could be doing better work.
Maybe. I would be curious to see him do not necessarily a Star Trek, but like a script that's not his, for instance.
Yeah. That would be interesting. I don't want to see him do a Star Trek. I hope that doesn't happen.
It won't. I'm sure it won't.
No, yeah.
Like, Yeah, it's just going to be one of those things that never materializes, I'm pretty sure.
I think it's like a weird hype that like producers are into, and then the moment they read a script, they're going to be like, okay, yeah, I see why this was a mistake.
Unless he's got, like, who knows? He's never done science fiction. Maybe he has some crazy-ass sci-fi idea.
That's true. He would really... Because he really does love... Like, I think my favorite thing that Tarantino does, which is something that Guy Ritchie later did...
Mm-hmm.
And it's my it sums up what I think what I like both of those styles are mm-hmm. is in Pulp Fiction when they turn to Marvin and he accidentally shoots him in the face and suddenly that's a whole problem.
That's a problem. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think Tarantino has a he knows all the tropes because he's such a nerd and such a fan
yeah.
that he's good at breaking them and doing interesting things with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I guess. Lately, it's felt like it's just, and then it's violence. Like Django Unchained was that too. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, for that reason, I feel like him doing sci-fi or him doing a genre outside of his comfort zone, he would bring that element to it. That would be really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Something like that, where it's just an inciting incident that you've seen in you know thousands of movies and it's never a big deal and just sitting down and be like no let's think about what the actual logical problem of this situation like what would this be and how would you have to deal with it and that yeah mm-hmm. that's such a man fuck Pulp Fiction's really good. You guys
yeah I really like Pulp Fiction. One of my favorites is Four Rooms. I know he only did a quarter of that movie
mm-hmm.
but he also Four Rooms his bit in Four Rooms is also taking a trope and immediately being hilarious with it because it's Tim Roth. It's two guys betting, one guy betting another guy that if he can light his lighter 10 times in a row, then he like gets something. And if he doesn't, then he gets his pinky cut off. And Tim Roth is there to be the person to cut off his pinky. And then they have the, like most of the scene is them setting this up and the rules, and then they get set up and he puts his pinky down and he fucks up the lighter the first try, and Tim Roth immediately chops off his pinky, takes the money they offered him and walks out of the room, and it's just like that is perfect, and it's a perfect ending to that film.
Tim Roth was cut from this movie.
He was. So mm-hmm. was James Marsden.
James Marsden. He was playing Burt Reynolds.
Yeah. It's a shame. I'm glad...
Cut from the film. Olfen. Glad Luke Perry made it in. And
yeah,
glad
and Luke Perry, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was funny how, like, the beginning credits, there's all these names, and it's like they should have said, starring for exactly one scene, each person.
That's pretty standard Tarantino.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. No, that didn't surprise me. It's just funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Particularly like Damian Lewis. It's like he was in the opening credits and he plays Steve McQueen in one scene.
Right.
He's got a great little monologue he gives. It's a fun scene. Mm-hmm. But then we never see him again.
Who was Emil Hirsch? Was he Polanski?
No, he was J. Sebring.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I didn't recognize who Polanski was.
No, I didn't either.
He's not really a major character. You just kind of see him.
Yeah, they knew not to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he's part of the story, but, yeah.
Yeah, he is.
I think that's all I have to say about this movie.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a bad movie. I would recommend this movie as one... If you love Tarantino, then you know you're going to see it. Otherwise, I would wait for streaming so that you can, like, do stuff. Like, I wanted to take out my phone during this one.
Yeah, I did not. I'm going to give you the opposite recommendation and say go see this movie. It's a lot of fun.
For the record, I recommend 2001 the same way. Like, I love 2001, but I also will put it on and then just do housework. Because I recognize that it's a very long movie with long stretches that nothing... Like, I love 2001. I wouldn't call it the best movie ever made or necessarily a good movie. Depending on... Well, it depends on your definition of why movies exist.
Yeah.
If you're thinking of them as art, pieces of art, then yeah, it's a great movie. But if you're thinking of them as pieces of entertainment, then Kubrick failed. And it did. The film bombed, I believe, and then got
It didn't, actually.
It got really popular with stoners. Like, I think it didn't do good at first or got bad reviews, and then it got...
Mm-hmm. I have to look that up, but I feel like it was one of his more successful. I could be completely wrong there.
Yeah, I remember hearing that it got like a renaissance, like because of drugs. Like it came out and people were like, what the fuck is this? And then people were like, but wait, with drugs, this is great.
yeah, it didn't do terribly. It made like $60 million on a budget of 12.
That's not bad.
No.
It's crazy that that cost $12 million. to go through all of time and to Jupiter.
Oh man, yeah, his movies do not do well. it is the most successful of his films.
Wow. That's saying
a lot.
Oh
no. You know what the number two is?
For him?
Mm-hmm.
The Shining?
Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh, that makes sense, because it's at that point he was Kubrick, so.
And it also starring a huge star.
Yeah, that makes sense. And yeah, who doesn't want to see them two fuck?
Of course.
Yeah.
The Shining's up there. The Shining is looks like his fourth.
Fourth?
Mm-hmm.
What's third?
Oh, adjusted for inflation, the Shining is number two.
Oh, okay. What's third?
Third, not adjusted for inflation, would be Full Metal Jacket.
No, that makes sense. Cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad we solved this mystery.
Think about that. Adjusted for inflation, it goes 2001, The Shining, Clockwork Orange, Full Metal Jacket, Eyes Wide Shut, and Doctor Strangelove.
Okay. Yeah. So everybody check out Kubrick films. Spartacus
made such little money that it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think I saw that once. I don't remember that at all.
It's an okay film. I remember the gladiator scene where he has to fight the big guy with the net, I think.
Yeah.
I can't remember. So clearly I don't remember it as
really
well
good.
As I thought.
What's his first film? Killing or The Killing? That one, I like that film because it's before he was Kubrick. So like it's black and white and it's like shot like an old movie, like an old person movie. Mm-hmm. But there's like little touches of Kubrick in it. That you can tell, like, oh, this guy's going to be Kubrick, but
oh,
not
yeah.
quite yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Sweet, yeah. So yeah, that's a sode.
Yeah, that's a sode.
We're all set here.
Yeah, yeah, we're done.
Dave, what do we got going on?
Ah, geez, Tom, we got a Patreon, patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. We got exclusive podcasts there, like Tom and Jeff Watch Batman and Fox Mulder is a Maniac.
Mm.
We got tiers where you can select a movie for us to do our very own. We just watched episodes about, like, you can tell us what to watch and then we will just watch it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, check it out.
We also got a store, tpublic.com/store/gamefullyunemployed. We just added a new design. I think a couple of other ones are on the way. So check that out, please.
Please.
And leave us a review on Apple Podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Do all those things.
Yeah. And,
and
I think
watch
that's
2001
it.
While you're
watch
vacuuming.
Yeah, watch 2001 while you're vacuuming. Literally I would wet vac. I would wet vac to 2001, and it makes wet vacing feel more epic. Or watch this movie to Once Upon a Time while you're wet vacing, or just watch it, I guess. But
do any of those things.
I feel like it's a good wet vac movie.
It seems like it. Yeah.
There's a lot of good wet vac movies out
there. Wet vacing sounds like an adult activity now that we've said it so many times.
Are you kidding me? It's fucking great. Drop some acid. You got a wet vac on acid. Now the kids should be wet vacking. All the kids
craze.
Should be wet. Yeah, the latest craze.
It's the latest craze. Kids are wet vacking to 2001.
Well, now that all right.
Let's be done now. Let's
all
be
right.
done.
Because I could all keep right. going for like an hour.
I know you could. We could. Yeah, we do a whole other episode about wet vacking.